Welcome to Humus and Tech, the first podcast by Olim and for Olim interested in the Israeli high-tech industry.
We are Maggie and Kevin, and today we're here with Alex, a software engineer and expert in machine learning. As you know, we're recording from Google for Startup Campus, Google's home for startups. Campus offers startups the opportunity to gain access to Google products, connections, and best practices, as well as programming and events for startups. We are now in their creative studio, a state-of-the-art video and podcast room available to startups for free. For more information on all things campus, check out their website, www.campus.co/Tel Aviv. So going back to what you just said, Alex is here today with us.
Hi.
Alex is also from Argentina, and Alex, we cannot wait for you to tell us everything about software engineering and machine learning.
I'll try to do my best.
First of all, thank you so much for being with us today, and let me ask you, what did you do before coming to Israel?
Okay, so basically, I was in Argentina, like you said before. I studied software engineering in the Universidad of Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work as a full-stack engineer in different startups, developing, basically. And when I finished, I decided that I had enough. I needed, like, a short break, that it wasn't... It didn't end up being so short.
yeah, we can see that.
Yeah. And basically, I traveled around lots of places for like 9 or 10 months before deciding I was gonna establish something a little bit more long-term here in Israel.
That's great. And why Israel? I mean, you just mentioned you travel to many countries and many places. Why making the stop here in Israel in Tel Aviv?
It's kind of funny. It didn't start as tech-related. So I moved here because Radiohead was playing.
Oh, really?
This is the greatest excuse I've heard
in a
while.
Yeah, it's the first time I'm hearing something like this.
Yeah,
I was considering to go to Europe to work there, and they told me, like, hey, why don't you come to Tel Aviv? I can help you look for an apartment. I can help you looking for a job, whatever, in the meantime to get more money. And I'm like, yeah, but I know Tel Aviv already. And yeah, but Radiohead is playing. Oh, interesting. Okay, buy me a ticket. And that was it. And when I was here, I found out about a study program I liked on data science. I applied. I was lucky enough to get in, and when I heard I was in, I canceled all the trips I had, and I moved here, I studied, then I got a job, and stuff just started happening.
This is insane story. Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I know Alex from Argentina. One of his trips back home, he was visiting, like, incognito mode. I managed to get a hold of him, and I told him, hey, I might be moving to Tel Aviv next year. Tell me about it. I have, like, these crazy doubts, kind of, what do you do on the weekends? I mean, everything is closed, right? But we talk a lot, and he was one of the things, like, that finally made me help make this move for me.
What an honor.
That's a great impact. So, actually, to all of you that have been listening to us for a few episodes now, we actually talked about Alex before, right?
We did, yeah. Remember on our first episode, we mentioned this guy that he was interested in looking, like, for a job in data scientist, and he was actually a software engineering, and it was really hard for him to find a job because actually you were really picky when you were looking for a job.
I was.
And then what did you do in the meanwhile?
So again, this city may be one of the most expensive in the world. And so basically you need to pay rent at the same time.
That sounds very logical. Yeah, you know.
I just found out when I moved here, you need to pay the rent. So it was kind of a funny moment in my life because I was working as a waiter in the beach while I was having interviews. So I remember I couldn't pick up the phone because you're not supposed to pick up the phone while you have your shift. And companies were calling, and I was, like, getting stressed, and I was finishing the shift, and I was, like, changing my clothes because they were stained with hummus.
Oh,
although
my God.
We all love hummus. And I changed the clothes fast, and I put on, like, a collar shirt and something, and I ran to the interviews, and that was my life for, like, 3 or 4 months.
Crazy time, right?
That's crazy time. So clearly you were working in the beach, and you were working as a waiter because you clearly, like, you took yourself some time to whatever to decide to which company you were applying for. Maybe, like, processes were too long. And this is something that it will probably happen to most of the people listening, mm-hmm. right? You know, like, hiring process can be very, very long in Israel.
Yep.
What do you suggest to people that are going through the same, or like that they need to like take into consideration that this may happen. They may not get a job in a week.
Yeah. And how do you handle these rejections?
That's a really good answer. First, which answer kind of both questions. It kind of sounds like a motivational poster, but it's really true. Like, don't lose hope. Just keep at it. That every no you get, you're closer to the first yes. In a sense that it's complicated. As soon as you come here, maybe you don't have experience, maybe you do, but the fact is, maybe you don't have contacts, which is something sometimes more important than experience. And people don't know you. So you need to be patient and you need to keep trying and try to move your CV to different places. Something that helped me a lot is being organized.
And what do you mean?
And playing the numbers game. Like, it's okay to send a lot of CVs, but you need to keep track of them. So if I send 100 CVs, I need to know where I sent the 100 CVs, to keep them maybe in an Excel file or something, to take down the name of the contact that I gave the CV to write down the date where I sent the CV. This is important because in that way, if you keep track of the dates, you know, hey, this CV to this company, I sent it a week ago. Maybe it's time for a follow-up email. Mm-hmm, and I ask what happened with my CV. Hey, did you get it? Do you have any doubts?
That's amazing. So you basically just build up a system around your own hiring process.
Yes, it's important because if not, stuff just starts falling through the cracks.
Yeah.
In a sense that, and you may quickly find yourself in a situation where somebody tells you, okay, let's do the interview on Wednesday. And you're like, who was this guy from which company?
Yes.
And it happens. And it's important, especially because the company doesn't want to feel like you sent your 100 CVs and they want to feel like special the same way you want to feel special because they contacted you. So you need to keep track of this stuff. And you're going to, if you do, you're going to maximize it also. Like you maximize your chances, basically. And also when you're more advanced, you can write which stage of the interview you are with that company, and especially important, which questions did they ask you, especially if they are technical. Because it comes a point, if you're in a process with 10 different companies, I would bet money questions will start to repeat. So if they ask you, what's the, I don't know, mathematical formula for this stuff, and you heard it already 3 times, you're going to remember. So
That's super interesting. Okay, so if you would go back to that stage in your life when you were at the beach working as a waiter, do you remember how many CVs did you send?
Yeah, actually, data oriented profile. I did my stats. I sent, I'm kind of ashamed of saying it, but it
no,
worked
this
out
is what we need.
Yeah. So I sent something like more than 200 CVs.
Wow.
Yeah, I got in total like 40-something interviews.
Wow, big range, right?
30 unique companies, like 30 companies. In those 30 companies, 46 interviews. And in the end, I got 4 offers, luckily. It was
wow.
A lot.
Yeah.
From 200, I mean...
Yeah. 2% success rate. Yeah.
So basically you're right. Like,
for the
people,
first job in Israel, yeah.
Yeah, so people should really like work hard also in the process of getting a job.
Definitely.
It's a hard process.
It is. Especially in the technical world. Like if a company just gives you 3 interviews to hire you, you're lucky.
Right.
Like, especially in the big ones, it's like 8. Sometimes it's crazy.
Absolutely. And how did you handle those like dead times, right? Like when you were actually waiting for an answer, were you anxious?
Yeah, I was anxious. I am an anxious person. You need to handle them as best as you can. Like, try to rely on your friends a lot. Sometimes you're going to have bad weeks. Sometimes you're going to have good weeks. It's like a roller coaster of emotions all packed into the months you're going to take to look for a job. Just hold on. Yeah, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Definitely.
Amazing. Okay, going fast forward. Okay, thank you for sharing this like traumatic experience, which you eventually came out great because you're here with us and you're working in a very successful company in a very successful position. So why don't you tell us a bit more about that? What are you doing now?
So right now I'm a data engineer in a company called Namogu, which sits in Herzliya. And I'm part of the data infra team, which handles the infrastructure of all the data pipelines and also the machine learning processes.
Cool. I want to know more about what are the differences between a data engineer, data analyst, and data scientist.
So nowadays, more and more these areas kind of start overlapping.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of leaders in the industry that kind of have the opinion that everything is evolving into a more like a full stack data engineer, which kind of does a little bit of everything. But if you need to like put them inside of like a classic bucket or something like that, the data engineer is kind of handling the more big data part of the picture every day, like millions and rows getting into the company, and they need to be in the different databases, the different data warehouses.
Okay, making sure the system works and the data is getting in.
Yeah, like it's flowing more than getting in from one database to another one, to a data warehouse.
And being able to scale it from...
Exactly. Scaling is a lot, also a big part of the thing. Like, okay, today we're handling 10,000 page views a month. 10,000 is pretty small, but we want next month to be 1 million, so we need to grow. And then for next quarter, we want 10 billions, and you need to scale. That's more of a data engineering kind of, which sometimes overlaps a little bit with DevOps and backend engineer.
Okay.
Data analyst on the other side is completely on the other side of the spectrum, is what happens with all of this data that we have? How can we analyze and turn it into information? What's happening? Checking patterns, how is the data distributed, checking trends, this is growing, this is not growing, trying to handle all of that noise and turning it into insights to show our clients, to show the people inside of the company.
Cool.
Lots of visualization, lots and lots of SQL. Mm-hmm. And the data scientist, on the other hand, it deals with all of these complex patterns in all of the data you have, and they try to predict stuff. They try to grow some information out of that data, like classification problems, regression problems, trying to predict what happened with this, with that.
This is where the buzzword machine learning comes in,
yeah,
right?
Lots of machine learning. Nowadays, also lots of deep learning, which has to do with neural networks. Yeah, I would say the difference lies in that kind of area.
It's super interesting.
Super interesting. And understanding that you clearly have a lot of knowledge in this area, what would you suggest to that person who's like wondering if they should go into like machine learning or data? Like, do you think it's something achievable for someone that doesn't come from that background? Do you think it's important for companies to hire people like that? Why do you think it's important for people to get into this world?
Well, I really think so, especially in data science and machine learning, which is kind of like Kevin used the word buzzword, and it's something super new. And it's not like nowadays you can go to university to study data science, but maybe 10, 15 years ago, you couldn't. So it's something super new. And the fact that we're having data science university programs now, it's a consequence of the times, that the times need those kind of degrees. If you see the seniors in this industry, they're basically statisticians, people who study statistics, engineers, lots of people from economics background. So because you're dealing with different kind of information, depending on the company or whatever, it's basically you need to have a little bit of general knowledge. So I think if you have like a logical kind of thinking and you have like a degree in a logical field, maybe economics, maybe science, maybe engineering, definitely give it a go.
This is great. And I want to also mention some things that you've been working on, some side projects. I think they were in the side from like a data analyst and also machine learning, like data scientist, two different projects you've been working on. Can you tell us more about those?
Yeah, of course. Well, one of the things you need to do, especially if you're like starting in the industry, and that's another good advice if you're looking for a job, start doing stuff on your own.
Like be proactive and like...
Yeah.
Okay.
Like lots of people, like our generation, like to complain a lot about like the jobs asking you for experience and you can't find a job because you don't have experience. So, you know, the vicious cycle. Get experience. Like it doesn't have to be a job experience. If you can, the better, obviously. But try to start building stuff on your own. So when they ask you, do you have experience? No, I don't have work experience, but I have experience in developing, I don't know, classification models because I've been doing stuff on my own. And that's exactly what I started doing when I was looking for a job. And actually, I kind of got the taste of it. So sometimes in my free time, I start to research different algorithms that I haven't used or stuff. And I write about them. And
what did you write about lately?
So the last thing I did, which turned up to be really successful in Argentina.
Just so you know, it was published like by our major newspapers in Argentina. You were also in the radio. They call you. They called you from Argentina, and you were live on the radio.
Respect.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. So please tell us more about
it. We will put the links in the description. But tell us more about it, please.
The nice thing about working with data is that you can always find excuses like to use different data sets of stuff you like. So because I love music, I was like, okay, I want to study this algorithm. On what should I apply it? So I got a database of the lyrics of one of my favorite musicians from Argentina. It's called Luis Alberto Spinetta. And I tried to predict his lyrics in a sense that I would create a good predictor, like a good prediction algorithm for the lyrics. And in the end, and super in a rough way, you can say that the little program started developing new lyrics.
Oh, so you could like reproduce like the way he would
exactly
play songs.
The neural network ended up learning the style of Spinetta and recreating new lyrics with that style.
That's
that
insane.
It's really cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I got some lyrics that the algorithm created, and I wrote an article. I posted the lyrics and I sent it by Twitter to a music journalist in Argentina, and the guy liked it so much that he published it in his music medium. And
wow.
Then just other journalists started taking it and publishing it in their own, and started moving
viral.
Around.
So
it
yeah,
went
just
viral.
Went viral, started picking
yeah.
up.
And then I got a call from the newspaper that Kevin told me, and it was like a really wow moment. It was amazing.
Of course.
What did your family say?
My family is super happy. They're like, oh, my son, the engineer.
You see, engineering is not only boring. You know, you can do like
Of course it's not boring.
No, but I'm saying for people that do not know engineering, it may sound like something like too complicated or something that is only related with numbers. And you can also apply it into like more creative stuff, such as music.
Yeah.
Or
especially pop music is engineering.
definitely, right? This is great, and I think it's very important that as you said, if you cannot find a job, on the meantime, at least create your own experience and highlight the things you know how to do on your own. And so when the moment comes and you need to go to that interview that you were actually like really expecting, you actually have a portfolio to show and be like, even though I was not hired for this major company in the past, I can showcase my work.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that you have used X or Y technologies that everyone is using or know that like...
And also, like you said, even though if you're not hired, another good advice would be ask for feedback, always. Every rejection you get, be completely nice, thank the interviewer or the company for the opportunity, and then ask for feedback.
Did you ever get any feedback that was relevant for you, and were you able to reuse that into a different situation?
100%.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, mostly it was technical.
Okay.
But it's really good. Like some big companies are going to tell you, no, we're not allowed to give feedback at this point, which is kind of sucks. But this does two things. On the one side, it closes a good relationship with the people you're interviewing. So maybe in the future you can
reapply to that again and feel comfortable.
Like the bridge is already created. And on the other side, the feedback really helps. Especially if they tell you, hey, listen, like I really liked this thing you developed. I really like your knowledge on this field, but we're kind of looking for somebody who knows a little bit more about neural networks because that's what we need right now. So like it's good for you to learn a little bit more about that, for example. And I remember in particular, it didn't happen to me. It happened to a really good friend. He was applying for a data science position in a really good company here in Tel Aviv. And when he asked for feedback, the guy took the time, wrote an email that I don't know. I suppose it took him like half an hour. It was crazy.
Wow.
But the guy was like, this is the minimum content that we expect to get in an interview for this company. To this day, I don't understand how they hire people. It was a mixture of a PhD in electrical engineering, data science, math, whatever you can. Like, I still can't believe what the guy answered, but he answered. And he was super...
And he took the time to answer, which is really respectable.
And it was amazing. And it was like a nice bullet points list to study in the future. Like, it helps a lot. Bemet.
Yeah.
Cool. So where do you see the trend here in Israel about machine learning and data scientists, these all international companies opening hubs here, like R&D hubs in Israel, and they are not only software engineering hubs, but they are more into this kind of machine learning and data things and more about this. What do you think about that?
It's really interesting, actually, because lots, like you said, lots of international companies are opening branches here in the Tel Aviv area just for maybe sometimes data science or different kind of modeling or like technical jobs that need a lot of research and a lot of education and training and like to put it in a certain way, like state of the art or cutting edge technology. They're doing it here, and I think they do it here because they know the talent is in Tel Aviv. And the people study really hard here for that. And
yeah, in Israel.
Yeah, especially Israel puts a lot of effort in and helps the people a lot to study this kind of thing. It's like really promoted by the state and by the companies. And
yeah, and by
lots
the culture itself, right? Yeah. I mean, everyone you talk to, a boy, a girl, like on the young ages, they already know they are kind of... They think, like, I mean, they are already interested in this kind of field.
Yeah, I'm going to go study. What's going to happen when I finish the army? Of course, I'm going to study Madia Makshev, computer science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's something that is very, like, in the society right now, and it's clearly growing every single day. The amount of groups and girls, especially, like, from girls, I know a lot of groups are coming from, like, even from high school, you know, and they're, like, already... starting to decide what they want to do in the future. And it's something that I probably is the state that really connects them into these high tech companies. And they're really encouraging them to, you know, to break that gap between like male engineers and women engineers. Yeah. So there's a lot of that happening.
For
it's
sure.
very interesting. You mentioned at first that one of the things that you were missing when you moved here were connections, even though you did have the knowledge to become this great engineer that you are now. You were always that, but just to reach that job, you probably needed more connections. How did you build that environment of people helping you, or what did you do in order to get those CVs to the right person?
I didn't think of a way of systematizing it, but some advice that I can give you, like in life, always be nice.
Important. Definitely.
It's important. Like always thank for the opportunity. Always be with a smile. Always manners. It goes a long way. Sometimes goes a long way. And then keep in contact with everybody. When you finish an interviewing process, even though we didn't get the job, add everybody on LinkedIn. Ask a lot, especially when you're looking for a job. Every person that asks, "Hey, how are you?" "I'm fine. I'm looking for a job. Do you know anybody who's hiring a data scientist?"
So, like,
or a software
your
engineer
key
or whatever?
To success here is like be open and do not assume people have the crystal, like the you know the crystal ball to
especially
understand.
Because it's like, yeah, you know what? My I don't know. My brother-in-law knows a guy that went to the Tzava with him, and he has a company that is looking for a data scientist. I'm gonna send him your CV, and that's way more effective than applying by LinkedIn or whatever.
Definitely.
And the other thing it helps a lot is, like I said before, chutzpah, like the Israelis like to say, being completely, I really don't know how to translate in English, but basically,
like out there, right? Like have no shame about saying stuff.
Be no shame proactively.
Exactly. Ask all your friends, ask all your contacts. Hey, do you know anybody at Google? I want to work in Google. I want to give my CV to somebody. Do you know anybody in Google? And it's actually that I remember you said on one of the last episodes, it was amazing, that a guy came on to you on the bar and said, like, "Hey, you work in Guesti. I want to work in Guesti. Can you pass my CV?" That's amazing. Like, do it. I remember I wanted to apply to a company. I just contacted somebody on LinkedIn. "Hey, I saw you work in, for example, Google. I would really love to work there. Please send my CV." And there's two reasons why they would do it. Number one is probably there's a bonus for people they hire through their referrals, so that's
that's true.
A win-win.
That's something to take into consideration,
yes,
right?
It's a win-win. And on the other hand, I don't know, I just assume people are nice and want to give you a hand. "Hey, I'm looking for a job."
Like, yeah, why wouldn't you help
me? Like, everybody, if anybody, Namu is hiring people, if anybody wants to come in and work for us, please feel free.
Reach out to Alex.
But yeah, I mean, why not? People want to help you.
That's amazing. And that's a great, you know, tip about understanding how things work here, because I'm sure, like in other countries, I mean, we can say this from our experience, it's not normal to just reach out to someone you don't know and just ask for a job. But that's something that here is not only completely acceptable, but that's actually a great advice to do. You know,
definitely.
So I think it's time to wrap it up.
Yes. And as you all know, by the end of each episode, our guest comes with the Hebrew word of the day that they think is relevant and important for you to know.
Yeah, what are we going to learn today?
So a word I hear a lot in my position and in the company is sharat.
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 And what does that mean?
Server.
Wow.
Super technical word today.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start hearing it a lot now that I know the word sharat.
Sharat. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool.
That's so cool. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a true pleasure. I believe I learned so much about machine learning, about data science, about how to become a great professional.
Boom. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks everyone for tuning in and listening to us.
And remember, you can follow us on Instagram at Humus and Tech, and of course on our website www.humusandtech.com. Please remember to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you. See you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.